the two-state solution seems to be gone. In other words, if we're talking about a real, genuine Palestinian state in the occupied territories, the West Bank, East Jerusalem, and Gaza, people have to understand that the occupied territories are only 22% of historic Palestine. So it's a very small area. And the chances of Israel actually withdrawing its settlements and the Palestinians actually getting a state, even on that 22%, seems to be very, very slim.
Is that another way of talking about returning to the 1967 boundaries?
That's right. In other words, if the Palestinians could get the West Bank, East Jerusalem, and Gaza, it's a small area, but they could have a shot at a viable state. They'd have a borders with Jordan and Egypt. They have a seaport in Gaza. They have an airport in Gaza. There'd have to be a connection between Gaza and the West Bank. And imagine having Jerusalem and Bethlehem as tourist attractions, which is a pretty significant thing. So I think they could make a go of it.
But
the problem is that they're not going to get that territory.
Because why? Because Israel will never return to the 67 boundaries because of the settlements?
That's right. That's right. Because of the settlements, there are 500,000 Israelis today living in the occupied territories. You know, settlements is a misleading word because people have the idea of a couple little cabins on a hillside. But in fact, some of these are satellite cities of 70, 80,000 people.
But some people thought that Israel would never withdraw from Gaza, and they did.
Well, they sort of withdrew. First of all, there were only 7,000 Israelis in Gaza. In addition, Israel really didn't get out of Gaza. In other words, it's true it withdrew its settlers and troops, but Israel retains effective control.
But still, they kicked settlers out. I mean, we all remember
seeing the
news footage of the settlers being kicked out. So it is possible for that to happen, isn't it?
Well, it's possible. On that little scale of 7,000 people, it's certainly possible. But if you're talking about, again, cities in which you have major urban populations, you know, there are more Israelis living in East Jerusalem than there are Palestinians. You're talking about a much, much larger evacuation of populations, and I don't see an Israeli government, either of the right or the left, that would ever have a mandate to really dismantle settlements in the West Bank. It just doesn't seem to me possible.
So is that a council of despair?
No. What it means is we have to begin to think of other options.
Because
if, in fact, the two-state solution is finished, I mean, the other logical alternative is a one-state solution. Now, that's something that really scares Israelis because it means the end of Zionism. It means the end of Israel as a Jewish state. But, you know, Israel is sort of trying to play it both ways. I mean, it's trying to resist the idea of a genuine Palestinian state because it wants to keep its settlements, but at the same time, it simply won't even entertain the idea of one democratic state of everybody.
But you can see why
they might be. Where it's going is apartheid, actually.
You can see why they might be resistant, can't you, given that the alternatives look like Fatah, which is fairly corrupt and incompetent,
right,
and Hamas, which is authoritarian. There isn't really an attractive alternative for Israelis in a one-state solution, is there?
Well, except that we have to understand that Israel's responsible for that. You know, we're at now, you know, about 20 or 30 years into a systematic campaign of assassinations of Palestinian leaders. I mean, every Palestinian leader that was competent is either dead or in prison. There aren't any outside. So if we have poor Palestinian leadership, which we certainly have today, that's an intended result of this kind of a campaign. And we're arguing in the Israeli peace movement that there has to be an alternative because we don't want to remain occupiers forever.
You're a part of the Israeli peace movement, and there is a vigorous Israeli peace movement.
Right.
The counter-argument is often made that there is no vigorous Palestinian peace movement, and that in itself is a condemnation of that side of the ledger.
Well, I mean, first of all, it's not true. I mean, I'm in Australia at the invitation of a group called Australians for Palestine that's run mainly by Palestinians here. So there are certainly organizations abroad. In Palestine, we work
a lot. Yeah, but the allegation is that if you're a really strong peace activist in Palestine, you will find yourself being threatened or your family being threatened.
Right.
It's very difficult. Isn't that true?
No, it's not true at all. As a matter of fact, there are more Palestinian human rights organizations than there are Israeli human rights organizations. There's a very vibrant Palestinian civil society. I think you have a situation which is true that the Palestinians themselves are concerned about, of a leadership that's getting to be more and more dictatorial. I think that's true. But the Palestinians are very proud of their democratic traditions, and they're very strong in terms of their organization. There are unions involved. Palestinians are out on the street all the time. And I think that they actually have a very good foundation for a very strong civil society. In fact, I would even argue that that's the reason why they don't get support from the Arab countries. I think the Arab regimes that are very authoritarian are afraid of the Palestinians precisely because of that grassroots democratic kind of a vibrancy that they bring that the Arab leadership does not certainly welcome.
Being an Israeli peace activist, how easy is that, given that most Israelis seem to be extremely conscious of the fact that rockets are being fired at them from Gaza pretty often?
It's sort of the other way around. The Israelis are enjoying a tremendous sense of personal security. You know, Israel's doing they feel they're in an ideal situation. You know, the Palestinian resistance has been reduced almost to nothing. You know, some rockets in this little town in the Negev. The Israeli economy is doing very well. Tourism is back. Even in this difficult financial situation, the Israeli economy is doing well. People have a very strong sense of personal security. There really haven't been any major terrorist attacks for a number of years now. Israelis are out on the streets all the time. They're feeling very secure. And the problem is that they've been told, the Israeli Jewish public has been told by all its leadership, right to left, that there is no political solution. They've been told that there is no partner for peace. This is Ehud Barak's statement. And so in a way, the Israelis don't want the occupation. They've never supported settlements. 70% of the Israeli Jews supported the Oslo peace process. But what they say is, but we can't make peace because the Arabs won't let us. So we're in a situation where the Israelis themselves are not an obstacle to peace, don't really want the occupation, but they've been convinced, you know, and that's what you hear all the time, and that's where the rocket fires reinforce that in fact the Palestinians don't want peace. And therefore, we're stuck in this situation. And we're trying to tell them that's simply not true.
Why aren't you succeeding, though? Because if anybody seems to be gaining strength in the Israeli political process, it's the far right. It's the party of Avigdor Lieberman.
Well, yes and no. I mean, we have to understand that, you know, there's 120 seats in our parliament. The largest party is Kadima of Tzipi Livni today. They only got 28 seats. The Likud of Netanyahu, who was going to form the government, only got 27 seats out of 120. Lieberman's party, which is the third largest, is only 15 seats. I think, on the contrary, I think the tremendous fragmentation of the Israeli political system and the fact that there is no party that has even a quarter of the seats in parliament shows how much there's a disconnect between the Israeli leadership and the people. There is no, I don't think it's fair to say the Israelis have gone to the right. I think the right-wing parties are able to form a coalition, but it doesn't really reflect, I think, the will of the Israeli public. The Israeli public, the way we describe ourselves, is confused. Because on the one hand, it wants peace. On the other hand, it's been led to believe that the Arabs won't let us. And so Israelis don't know what to do. Should we vote? If we vote for the left, we're voting for peace. But wait a minute. They tell us, even on the left, that peace is impossible. This is what Barak tells them. Well, then if we vote for the right, we're voting for more settlements. The occupation gets only stronger. Peace gets further away. But if the problem is security, then maybe we should vote for the right because they're the tough guys that run the army that'll bring us security. So I think Israelis want to vote for the left and peace, but they've been persuaded to vote for the right and security because this whole conflict has been presented to them as an issue of security.
Do you see any way that it's going to improve from your perspective?
The only way it's going to improve, I think, and that's why I'm in Australia, not that this is the most strategic place to be, but is through international pressures. I think that the world, I think they're beginning to understand this, even in the United States, that this is a global conflict. I mean, you know, James Baker called the Palestinian conflict the epicenter of instability in the entire Middle East. And if you want to stabilize the Middle East, if you want to deal with Islamic fundamentalism, which is getting pretty close to Australia in certain parts of Eastern Asia, if you want to deal with Iraq and Iran and Afghanistan and Pakistan and the Arab regimes that are teetering today, you've got to deal with the Palestine issue, because this is around Jerusalem, which is tremendously important for Muslims. And the idea that Israel is Judaizing Jerusalem, which Israel says it is doing, is something that's really creating a theological conflict. It's going to be very dangerous. But in addition to that, I think the idea that this is an American Western occupation in which an Arab people is being suppressed and oppressed by a Western country. And Israel's not even seen as the main actor. I think most Muslims see this as an American occupation, not an Israeli occupation. I think the West has to understand that it's not going to get on to business as usual and stabilize the Middle East and the whole global system as long as this conflict continues. And that's really our message, you know, that we're going to have to impose a solution from the outside. Israel's not going to like it, but for the good of everybody, including Israelis, this has got to be done, and it's got to be done from the outside.